Call the Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development Committee to order for Wednesday, February 13th. Members, we have quite a few items on the agenda. I think that it's going to be a very informative meeting, so we'll get started. We're going to bring up the Minnesota Agriculture Education Leadership Council. We have the Executive Director and Jerry Schoenfeld as well. So welcome to the committee. Feel free to start whenever you're ready, Doctor. Dr. Henry, welcome to the committee.
Hi. Good evening, Mr. Chairman and the committee. My name is Kesha Henry. Thanks for having me today to present on the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council. This afternoon, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the history of the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council. I'm also going to talk to you about our accomplishment over the years since we've been in existence in 1997. I'm going to talk to you about the future goals of MEALC and some of the work that we have been doing over the years and hope to continue doing. So the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council, as abbreviated, MEALC, has been in existence since 1997. We are a 17-member legislative council that was created in 1997. The need for our creation was, there was a shortage of agricultural education teachers across the state, which is currently a problem today. So we were developed in an attempt to provide leadership to promote and expand ag education across the state at all levels. So from primary through higher education, agricultural education programs. Just to go over some of our objectives that we were created to fulfill, we were created to increase student enrollment in agricultural education programs in Minnesota at all levels, as I mentioned earlier. We want to expand the scope of agricultural education both programmatically and geographically. So therefore, at the secondary levels, we want to increase the number of ag education programs across the state, as well as expand the existing programs to improve the teaching and learning experience for the students across the state and teachers. We also are involved in coordinating activities and provide leadership to improve ag education programming and increase partnerships with various organizations. We also want to strengthen and enhance the development of high school agricultural education programs and to strengthen our FFA chapters across the state. Currently, we have over 9,500 students in FFA across the state, and we're very excited about that, and we hope to increase that number. So essentially, we want to serve as a premier leadership organization in ag education in Minnesota. Talk to you a little bit about our budget and how we are funded. In 1997, the Minnesota legislature provided a biannual special appropriation to the University of Minnesota base level funding for the enhancement of agricultural education programming in Minnesota. Our original allocation at the time was $300,000. To date, our current operating budget is $238,131, and that funding comes through the University of Minnesota Ag Education Ag Special. We also have an additional $235,000 that comes through the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. That amount goes straight towards our grants program that we offer twice per year. So our total budget for the year is $473,131. Currently, our office is housed in the St. Paul campus at the University of Minnesota. Just to go over a little bit of our accomplishments since our development in 1997, we have aided in the revitalization of the University of Minnesota Agricultural Education Program through enhanced scholarships, enhanced recruitment efforts, enhanced agricultural education staff, and our work towards the Ag-Ed Education 2+2 network, where we have students can transfer from the two-year colleges and complete their degree at the four-year institutions. We also have awarded over $2.7 million in grants, competitive grants, that assist with revitalization of multiple Ag-Ed programs across the state and develop new projects. Our scholarship program, we have offered over 347 scholarships since 1997 to students for a total of $346,750. That's $346,750. We have also funded additional special projects for over $600,000. We have been very instrumental and catalyst behind the creation of the Academy for Sciences and Agriculture, which is a charter school located here in the cities. There are over 300 students enrolled in that school at this time, and students come to that institution across from the metro area. So this is a great model of an urban agricultural education program here in the cities. We have also provided funding for transition planning for farm business management instructors. We have also provided funding for the implementation of an online curriculum that crosswalks Minnesota graduation standards. And this has been a key accomplishment for us because our teachers find this resource to be very useful at the secondary level. We have also provided dollars and training to help teachers integrate science and economic standards in their curriculum. We're also very proud of our funding and support that we provide to the University of Minnesota to fund the teacher induction program that provide mentorship and professional development for new teachers. I think over the years we have focused a lot on recruiting teachers, but a key component is also retaining those teachers. So we provide support to ensure that those teachers, once they get out there, we retain them in the field. And hopefully, in our quest to increase the number of teachers in ag education, we're doing some work in towards that end. Some of our future goals and some of the work that we have also done, we have developed a blueprint for agriculture, food, and natural resource education in Minnesota. That was developed last year prior to me joining MILC. However, we are now at phase two of this blueprint that focuses on five key areas in ag education, the first of which is agricultural literacy, the second is secondary education, then we have two-year colleges. We also have focus on farm business management as well as agricultural education programs at the baccalaureate and above levels. Intertwining those goals for our blueprint are a list of specifics that I will go through that we hope to accomplish through our blueprint. Essentially, we want to increase the number of secondary ag-ed programs in Minnesota. We want to develop new programs and partnerships to promote agricultural literacy across the state from the primary level through higher education. We also want to reach new audiences and develop new partnerships and programs in rural and urban areas. So hopefully we can work towards developing a model like the Academy for Sciences and Agriculture here in the cities as well as other areas in rural communities. We want to develop stronger partnerships and programs with two-year colleges to increase the number of transfer students at the University of Minnesota in ag education. We want to also provide new opportunities for teachers to obtain international experience, to gain understanding of international agriculture, and to see what they can use or take back to their classroom here locally in Minnesota to enhance their teaching and learning experience for themselves and the students that they serve. We want to provide new opportunities for research and development to provide empirical evidence to support our work and to inform the new projects and programs that we plan to develop. We also want to engage in grant writing to provide external funding to support new programs and projects in ag education across the state. We also hope to develop new partnerships with local agribusiness organizations to promote sustainable agricultural education program across the state.
Thank you very much, Ms. Henry. Mr. Schoenfeld, would you like to make a few comments? Or we certainly can open it up
very,
to...
Very few, Mr. Chairman, because okay. I know we're a little short on time here.
Welcome to the committee.
When the Minnesota Ag Education Leadership Council was created in 1997, I was there to participate with that. And for some of you that remember Senator Dallas Sams, he was one of those that, that helped bring this off the ground, along with Senator Leroy Stumpf, who still serves with you as a colleague here. And at that time, it was totally funded through the University of Minnesota Ag Special. There was a special provision that was put into the Ag Special for this program. Since that time, we have also had a partnership with the Minnesota Department of Ag, as Dr. Henry has indicated. But what I wanted to point out to you is that when you think about MEALC, think about it as a problem solver. It's truly a unique, I think it's unique around here in terms of a state, you know, we have a state statute that sets it up. It's a separate entity. It is not as such a part of the University of Minnesota. It has its own board of directors, and there are six legislators that serve in that board along with a number of other people. One of the problems we had in 1997 was the fact that the agricultural education comes from many different areas. As an example, farm business management presently is housed with the MINSCU system. The University of Minnesota in St. Paul is the only place in the state that you can get a degree in agricultural education with which to teach. The number of the two-year community college within MINSCU, what used to be the community colleges, offer the first 2 years of ag education and then go into the four-year program with the 2+2 program. In addition to that, the Department of Agriculture does work with agricultural literacy in terms of ag in the classroom and a number of things. And the Department of Education, through the general education system, oversees approximately 190 ag ed programs across the state. The problem was, in 1997, that none of these entities were talking to each other. And they didn't work cohesively or in any unified way to deal with ag education. And so that was really the purpose of bringing everybody around the same table, and I think that that has been accomplished. Beyond that, I mentioned earlier that it was a problem solver, and I'm just going to give you two or three examples here of what I'm talking about. There is a fairly small wing of the MEALC organization that does provide grants. These grants are not something that are ongoing over time. What I'm trying to say is that they are generally pilot project kinds of grants, and that they do not fund programs year after year after year, or the same program. But they do provide for opportunities to research and develop in ag education within the individual schools, and they're used statewide in that manner. Problem, 1997. We were down to six graduates at the University of Minnesota at the point in time we started talking about this. Today, there are 93 undergraduates. There are 30 graduate students. At one time, we were up, I believe, to 120 when we had everything going. So we've had a little retracement, but we're still doing much better than we did. And I think this spring, if I'm right, I think there are 18 that are going out student teaching. So that's threefold what we had back in 1997. How did that happen? It didn't happen just by accident or without any effort. MLC, for instance, was instrumental in starting the recruiting program at the University of Minnesota. They provide funding and direction for the recruitment of students, where a recruiter was actually hired to go out and meet with students in the high schools and help interest them in ag education. In addition to that, Dr. Henry described the scholarship program as an example. And a general kind of a awakening or public relations effort on the part of MLC to make young students aware of the opportunities in this field. So that's how it has gone from the 6 graduates to where we are today. Still needs improvement, still needs a further, many things further to go. It also was instrumental in working with the University of Minnesota and the Minsky system to develop some of the 2+2 programs across the state and so forth. One of the other things that has happened in a very positive way, in my opinion, is that, particularly with Dr. Levine working on this, traditionally, for almost, I think it was like 80 years, the Ag Ed program was divided between the Department of Education in the Minneapolis campus and the College of Agriculture on the St. Paul campus. And as I understand it, now we're all over on the in the College of Agriculture on the St. Paul campus for Ag Education, which I think is an improvement as well. And that was all part of this whole effort. The legislature also provided funding in order to increase the amount of professors, and maybe Dr. Levine sitting here can help me out here, but I think we went from a half-time professor. I think we're up to 3 or 3.5 now, and so that was a big deal. Okay, so that's how MLC helps to solve those problems and what they did. Problem number two, urban lack of involvement in agriculture. And most of us from the rural area understand that. That's why we talk about ag literacy and trying to make urban people a little bit more involved. MLC helped create the charter school with 300 students that are from the Twin Cities here, based upon it was in their original mandate in the legislation, and it was based upon a Chicago experience in which the Board of Mercantile Exchange in Chicago had created the largest in the country in terms of an urban agricultural school, and so that all students in Chicago from urban areas that ended up there, and we copied much of that, and it's developed at Van Nuys Heights, and you should go out and take a look at it sometime. I think you'd be impressed. Beyond that, we had a problem a few years ago where as the legislature in general education moved more and more and more towards what we call STEM, the science, technology, engineering, and math. Many of the career and tech programs were put on the back burner as such. And ag education was having a difficulty in competing against the time slots in the day. Because of budget cuts, many schools went from 7 periods a day down to 6, some down to 5. And with regard to that, the situation was that there was less and less opportunity for ag education to be presented. So one of the things that MLC did was help to create what's called MyCart, which was a curriculum development. And I can say that we are, I believe, the only group, ag education, that has really cross-referenced every single standard and benchmark that is required in what the legislature required for graduation rules, and we're able to do that in such a way that our programs, through changes in the legislature here as well, in terms of the graduation requirements in the law, you recognized that the efforts that were done for ag education qualified them to be a science credit or an economics credit in graduating from high school in Minnesota, the same as, for instance, a biology or chemistry. And those are the kind of things. And those are just a few examples. What I want you to go away from here with, I guess, is that MLC is a problem solver, and it's a hands-on problem solver. Every year there's a new problem, a new issue, comes before the board, and the board has takes the experience of all the people of these 17 individuals and their respective entities, whether they represent the University of Minnesota or MNSCU or Department of Education, and collectively are able to work out and solve some of the problems along with some of the funding that they're able to do, and they end up with some long-term solutions. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your time, and any questions that anybody might have.
Sure. Executive Director Henry, I just want to thank you for your presentation. I think that was very helpful. And
thank you,
I know that we saw that list of your goals. I agree with many of those things. And just so members know, too, that Senator Dames has been reappointed to serve on the council, myself and Senator Coonan. So we look forward to working with you on these very important issues, and I think that we'll be very successful.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Members have any questions for either Mr. Schoenfeldt or the Executive Director?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Schoenfeldt, you had alluded to the MLC gets
dollars through the Ag Special for their support through the university, but yet MEALC is a separate organization from the university. Would you mind expanding a little bit on the relationship that MEALC does have with the university, or how it was originally set up, what that relationship should be?
Mr. Schoenfeld?
Well, Mr. Chairman, for instance, if you take a look at the state statutes, you'll find that MEALC is set up by state statute. The original funding came through the Ag Special. Originally, there was $1 million that came through the Ag Special in 1997, and that original $1 million was divided between the Ag Ed Department in order to provide additional individuals to work in the Ag Ed Department. That's part of the reason we've got three today instead of a half. And in addition to that, there was a separate fund line, not as a separate line item out of that Ag Special, but as an understanding by the university that it would be kept there. And there's nothing in the law that says that it has to be at the University of Minnesota. The board could determine where it would like to have it housed, as an example. But initially what happened was the University of Minnesota offered to provide some housing for it. And because the Ag Ed Department was right there, it made some sense to have it in close conjunction. And since that time, to be blunt about it, there have been differences of opinion over time. The University of Minnesota acts as a fiscal agent and is not, at least in my opinion, in total control of it. It is up to the board to determine where you spend, and as a member that serves on the board, you are aware that it is your decisions that determine how money is spent. Specifically, it cites in the law that the executive director is hired by the board. Now, that didn't quite happen exactly that way this last time around, but that is what it says in the statute. They work hand in hand together, but ultimately, by statute, it is a separate entity. It is not. University of Minnesota acts as a fiscal agent and works with and on behalf of, and I think MEALC does the same for the University of Minnesota, but it is not. It has its own statute. The board is set up by statute. It's not as set up by the University of Minnesota. So it is a separate entity. We sometimes have to remind ourselves of that, but it is a board decision.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schoenfeld. Are there any other questions from committee members? If not, thank you very much for your presentation. We look forward to working with you this session.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next on our agenda, we're going to hear from the Minnesota State Colleges and University regarding their programs in agriculture and maybe a little bit more specifics on the farm business management programs. And today we have the president of South Central College, Keith Stover, as well as interim president of Riverland Community College, Kent Hansen. So welcome to the committee, gentlemen, and whenever you're ready, come up to the table and introduce yourself, and we'll be glad to hear what you have to discuss with us this afternoon.
While Mary Rothschild is getting this set up, Mary is with the system office and leads a lot of the technical work education-wise at the system office, and so I just should kick this off and not waste any time getting to our
introductions. Could you state your name for the record, sir, so we have it on the tape?
I will.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes. Chair Sparks and committee members, I'm Keith Stover, and you can hit the button. I'm Keith Stover, president of South Central College, and joining me today is Kent Hansen, interim president of Riverland Community College. We'd like to thank you for this opportunity to talk with you about the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities Agriculture Education and Farm Business Management Programming hosted at 9 of our institutions. The agriculture, food, and natural resources sector is a $50 billion a year industry in Minnesota. Minnesota is not only a leading producer of agriculture commodities, it is also the location of major agriculture industry leaders. The economic vitality and health of Minnesota, the region, and the country is dependent upon profitable agriculture business ventures. The importance of a supply of highly educated producers and workers is paramount for continuing success in all areas of this agricultural sector. Farm families and agriculture business leaders from across Minnesota believe that there is a tremendous opportunity for future generations of agriculture that can and will deliver graduates with both the skills necessary to advance the state's global competitiveness and the aptitude for the lifelong learning that is fundamental to sustained success. And that Minnesota can lead the nation in delivering high-quality, affordable agriculture education so that Minnesota can compete globally. This will require a re-emphasis on agriculture at all levels of education, but particularly agriculture teacher education, where there's new energy but a shortage of ag teacher candidates. MinSCU joined with DEED and the Minnesota State Chamber of Commerce to hold over 50 listening sessions across our state that engaged more than 1,450 people at 650 business leaders to help us understand the workforce needs of the future. Specifically, the listening sessions were designed to understand the workforce needs of business and industry, align the supply of graduates with employers' needs, align the skills and knowledge needed by employers with what is taught in instructional programs, and improve student awareness of employment markets. In agriculture, 5 meetings were convened with more than 180 attendees. Employers focused on the following occupational program groups: farm business operation and management, animal and plant science systems, agribusiness systems, food science and technology, ag service technicians, and those are the mechanics that service all of that fine new machinery you see in the farm fields. A few of the preliminary workforce findings included: many employers are having difficulty filling positions, particularly for service technicians, food science technicians, and at the other end of the spectrum, PhD level scientists in the fields of food, soil, and animal science. The agriculture industry has difficulty attracting and retaining new hires. Many young hires decide to return to the family farm or to use their technical skills in other industries. Employers project a wave of retirements. Employers are looking for hires with strong interpersonal communication, presentation, and sales skills. Employers speak about the importance of increasing student, and that means K-12 and college, awareness of career opportunities in the ag industry. A national response is the new 18-month-old Teach Ag campaign, and employers emphasized the importance of continuing current and creating future internship opportunities. Because of the new energy driven by the price of ag commodities, all of our ag enrollments are up significantly in the MinSCU system. We're showing you 3 of the program areas on this slide. There's only 1 ag service technician program in the state with an estimated need for 170 graduates per year over the next 10 years. And, of course, that's generated by all of the machinery that's being sold right now, and it's out in the fields. And, of course, the new technology that drives that as well. So there are new skills driven into that program as well. And then to respond to this renewed energy in agriculture, South Central College, with campuses in Mankato and Faribault, and Minnesota West Community and Technical College, with campuses in Worthington, Jackson, Granite Falls, Pipestone, and Canby, have initiated a Southern Minnesota Center of Agriculture in partnership with ag business leaders. Pioneer Hybrid, WFS Cooperative, Senex Harvest States, POET, the Ag Utilization Research Institute, DeVisco Foods, Ziegler Cat, Duncanson Growers, Halverson Farms, AgStar, Minnesota Grain and Feed Association, U of M Research Stations, Minnesota Soybean Association, Minnesota Pork Producers, Cargill, Bremer Bank are just a few of the early adopters that are representatives on our new Southern Minnesota Center Advisory Council. Our goal is to build a sustainable model that will be expanded by adding other colleges, universities, and agriculture business sector representatives, leveraging private and public resources to create innovation, initiate program development and research, advance professional preparation and development of agriculturalists and agriculture teachers through our 2+2 partnership with the University of Minnesota, build domestic and international entrepreneurial and marketing opportunities, and to partner with those who have interest in the economic development opportunities within agriculture and related industries. Most recently, we hired Brad Schlesher as our new Dean of Agriculture in November and hosted our first advisory council meeting in December. Next steps include developing a strategic plan and early implementation of specific steps in expanding ag safety, ag literacy, and enhancing partnerships in research. Thank you. Kent?
Mr. Hansen, welcome to the committee.
Chair Sparks, committee members, for the record, my name is Kent Hansen. I'm the interim president at Riverland Community College. Prior to that, I was the vice president of academic affairs up at Northland Community and Technical College in East Grand Forks and Thief River, and I've been involved in farm business management programs with both of those colleges. So I wanted to spend a little time with you today talking about our programs that we have within the Minnesota State Colleges and University system. I'm pleased to have this conversation. These programs are very important to our colleges and the community. When we look at farm business management and the approach that we take with farm business management, it's really a personalized program that's designed to help farmers improve business operations. And these are some of the outcomes that we have. The primary mode of instruction that our farm business programs have is one-on-one instruction. And yes, we do house calls. We take our program out, and so we get involved in, on the farms. You can see the outcomes here. I'll just go through them briefly and talk a little bit about it so you can have an understanding about the program. But apply principles of farm business management to farm operations. This is real-world case study as our instructors go out and work with the farms on their own business operations, so it's very real-world education. Demonstrate effective business analysis, planning, and goal setting, so our instructors work with the farmers on goal setting and business planning. Apply technology to current and future business needs. Demonstrate proper utilization of data and decision-making. And you all should have received a copy of the 2011 annual report that our instructors work with the University of Minnesota and put out an annual report every year. This report is very important to our farmers for making decisions and doing benchmarking, as well as our lenders use this information, and many agencies use this yearly report, and it's really comprehensive, and we're really proud of the work that's done on that annual report. Other things that our students are doing is evaluating or modifying business plans based on environmental factors and trends. Obviously, the business plans are a very important aspect of getting funds, to get funding and loans. They work to manage risk in the farm businesses and develop and implement commodity marketing plans. Our program is an approved vendor for required borrower training for the Farm Service Agency and Minnesota Rural Finance Authority, so we work in conjunction with those agencies as well. When we look at our farm program and the work that you're doing in this committee, our farm program really has a big impact on the rural economies. As our farms are more productive and profitable, that money can be put back into the communities as an economic engine. And so the work that our faculty do with the farmers is to make sure the farms are run effectively and efficient and do well in making profit. So I'd like to move on a little bit to show you our enrollment trends. We've got about 3,000 students across the state. The numbers have been going down a little bit since the early 2000s, but still there's quite a number of students across the state. I'll show you where they are located. They're scattered throughout the state with a great number of those students in southern Minnesota. I know at Riverland, about 7% of all of our credit production is in the Farm Business Management Program. And about 10% of our student body is enrolled in the Farm Management Program. And so southern Minnesota, where Keith and I hail from, is really has a strong enrollment in the FBM program. Now, as we look at how the Farm Business Management Programs are allocated throughout the state, we've got six of them, and they're regional programs. They serve by region. Our curriculum is a statewide curriculum that we deliver in diplomas, certificates, and advanced certificates. Now, as we look at our Farm Business Management Program, as I mentioned earlier, it's a very important program to our colleges and the community. Remember before I said that we make house calls? Just like physicians in the old days made house calls and healthcare has changed, we're in the process of looking at analyzing our Farm Business Management Programs to figure out an efficient and effective way to not only deliver to our current students, but our future students. We have a task force that has been put together with four presidents and faculty to be able to figure out the new era of delivery in farm business management. We're engaging our advisory committees in each of the regions basically to ask them how they see this program evolving into the future. And we've met a couple times with our task force. Our various advisory committees are in the process of meeting. I know my committee at Riverland is meeting on February 28th, so I'll be looking forward to engaging our advisory committee on future and how we can best deliver FBM education, not only to our current students, but hopefully to expand that to include more students across the state. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll take questions if you or anybody else has any.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Hansen and President Stover, for your presentation. That was very helpful. I would agree with you that these are very important programs, especially the farm business management. So thank you for your work to do on that. And just so members know, too, the interim president, Mr. Hansen, has done a wonderful job, and we're going to be sorry to see him leave. We're in a search process right now, but maybe we'll talk to the chancellor and see if we can do something about that. Thank Do members you. Have any questions for either of the witnesses?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dames?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Hansen, when we talk about probably looking at the ways we're delivering our support to the two-year students, of which basically we're talking about agricultural producers, as I understand it, at this point in time, the majority of that is done on a one-to-one basis at the farm site. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. There is some... Oh, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
Yep.
There is some workshop and a little bit of online, but it's primarily one-on-one.
Senator Davis. Mr. Chair, follow-up. And as I understand now, the working group that you're working, your task force group, they're also looking at different ways of presenting these services. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And have you done some research with the folks that are receiving these services? Have you done a survey or anything to find out what their preferred method is and preferred participation, and do you have anything showing that with the change that you may, if you go to a different model, what that might do to reduce your attendance or something like that, or your participation?
Mr. Hansen?
Mr. Chair and Senator, there has been some preliminary work done. There was a survey in 2012, and a lot of those results indicated the preference for one-on-one instruction. We are not presupposing the outcome of our task force. As I will be meeting with the advisory committee at Riverland, many of those are students, lenders, and other members interested in ag, and we will be gathering information. I would say, if I could speculate, I'm thinking that students probably do prefer one-on-one. As I mentioned in the beginning, we would probably all like our physicians to come to our house as well. But you know, we need to look at a different model. Not entirely different, but we will be engaging across the state and find out some answers to those questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hansen and President Stover, and I think you might have mentioned this, but are your farm business management programs, the enrollment you said is pretty steady or pretty constant? I know you can't talk maybe system-wide, but at least to your specific institutions, is that true?
Chair Mr. Sparks, our enrollment is declining a little bit. It's been fairly stable. A lot of declines and increases kind of have to do with when you lose faculty, because a lot of times there's that bond that's created with the faculty and the students. So when faculty leave, sometimes the enrollment goes down a little bit. But overall, the enrollment is down a little bit, as you saw in the slide. I would say that represents the enrollment in our institutions. However, that decline, as you can see, is not really significant. It's, of course, after 2002 and 2003, and then it kind of stabled, but in a little bit of a declining mode. Okay. Obviously, we don't want to lose a bunch of students, so we're very interested in the outcome of these conversations.
Okay. And I would like to respond to Chair Sparks.
Okay, President Stover.
I think we have had the opportunity at all of our colleges to look at ways not just to maintain what we have, but how we could grow this particular sector of the work we do, particularly in areas where agriculture is the biggest thing going. It's the biggest leg on the three-legged stool in your area. Then you really need to look at how we can advance that. So this isn't this study that we're doing right now. And by the way, this, I think there have been three studies in my 14-year tenure as president of South Central College, and I've been involved in every one of those. Each time we're trying to look at ways to grow this program, not maintain it. So even though we've got a decline, we're constantly working on that. Now, anytime you bring on a new young faculty or replace somebody who's retired, there's a three-year window for them to build up their enrollments, because not all of the students get handed off. Some of those students go away. Some of them follow instructors. And so I think we're doing everything from a presidential standpoint that we can to grow. So
thank you very much. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I think about the younger farmers in my community, I see many of them coming back from some fairly extensive four-year programs and that type of thing, and probably have a much broader background in many issues, both in terms of production agriculture and management, than perhaps their fathers and grandfathers did. Are you seeing a smaller number of the younger farmers participating in your programs, or is that increasing or at least remaining constant?
Well, for the schools,
excuse me,
Senator Sparks, for the schools who have agribusiness programs and ag production programs on our campuses, it's easier for us to transition those students on to FBM, whether it be at Riverland or whether it's at MinnWest or at South Central. And I would just talk about those three schools. Both MinnWest and South Central do have those ag programs on campus, so it's easier for us to transition. But we do work with Riverland in that endeavor as well. So we're really thinking that more young people are, this momentum is coming back. We have kind of a lost generation of ag producers, as you know. But, boy, there's energy today, and that's why we're considering this new, rolling out this new center. So
thank you very much. Any further questions from the members? I just would like to thank you both very much. As you can see, there's a lot of interest around this topic. I'd like to hear the words about growing, and obviously, Mr. Hansen, I'll follow up with you on your meeting on the 28th and look forward to hearing that. But thank you for spending time with us today. Thank you very
thank
much.
You very thank much. You very much.
Next, we'll hear from Dean Levine, the University of Minnesota College of Food, Agriculture, and Natural Resource Sciences. Dean, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, I would have brought, this is Alan Levine, I'm the Dean of the College of Food, Agriculture, and Natural Resource Sciences. I guess we should have brought our band to do the rouser for you. there's a handout. I figured that Senator Sparks didn't have super eyes, so we have a handout that looks, that has slides on it, a PowerPoint handout, plus a couple others. And I'll start out by saying that our college has a very diverse portfolio. You can see from our mission statement that what we're trying to do is engage the best teaching we can have, research, outreach, public engagement, in terms of improving agricultural and natural resource systems and science across the state and the country and internationally. The second slide shows a little picture that in 2006 we were formed as the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Sciences, because the College of Natural Resources joined with the College of, it used to be called COFES, but it was College of Ag and Environmental Sciences, as well as a department that came out of College of Human Ecology that was shared. In any event, we were formed in 2006, and we currently have 11 academic departments. We share one with the College of Biological Sciences. We have 30 interdisciplinary centers that are associated with our college. Most of them are self-funded through entrepreneurship. And then we have 9 research and outreach centers, the map of which is shown on the next slide. And I included a brochure called Enhancing Minnesota, which shows that these centers have research going on at them, as well as in collaboration with Extension. We have programs going there. They are dispersed throughout the state. They cover the 3 biomes, including a forestry center up at Cloquet. It is the opportunity to do agricultural research on various soil types and environment systems, different systems. We've really put our mission around 4 themes: food, health, and ag systems, the bioeconomy, global climate, and environmental changes, and biodiversity. Biodiversity was a smaller circle when we started, but as time progresses and we see invasive species, and we're much more interested in the diversity of the population that's coming about, both in our natural systems and as well as our agricultural systems. In terms of student body, we have 1,993, if that's the exact number, of undergraduates. In fact, we have a couple I'm going to shout out about today that are in the audience here. Luke Madeira, who's in Senator Bonhoeff's district, is in urban forestry, and Brittany Johnson is in applied plant sciences. They moved over there. They were behind me. And they're accompanied by Mary Buschetti, who's our alumni director. They just are representative in learning about this process to see exactly how the legislative process goes. It's an important part of this. Of these 1,993 undergrads, 302 came from new high school admissions. But we also had 298 of transfer students. We get transfers from the Minscu system and other schools, as well as within the university. We have a lot of majors that are discovery majors. There are a lot of students in high school that never heard of some of the majors we have. They take a course, they get excited, and they enter into it. We have 1,379 that are continuing. We had about 15 majors. We're reorganizing a little bit in terms of the kinds of majors that we're going to have in the future. I also should mention that we have 775 graduate students who provide the next generation of researchers and teachers across the international portfolio, and we have 13 graduate programs. Our profile is really focusing on excellence as well as competency in the agricultural and natural resource sector. Our students, it's a very competitive university, as you know. I have the profile there. Our students, though, come from around the state. We have 905 of our students from the Twin Cities, but 450 or so come from every single county except 8 of them, and I don't know which 8 are not represented, but I suppose we better go visit them. We have 309 students from Wisconsin, 191 from other states, and 135 from international, 135 to 140 from international programs. I have a listing on the next slide of all of our undergraduate programs. I won't go through them, but you can see they represent everything from the food area. Food science should be on this list as well. Health sciences like nutrition, the traditional ag sciences, which incorporate plant sciences, as well as animal science. So we have applied economics is a very important major for us as well. So you can see we have a variety of majors to try to cover the spectrum. During this last 4 to 5 years, we've been looking at our undergraduate curriculum to try to revitalize it at some level, get students with new interests that want to come on board. And one of the new majors we're establishing is food systems, which addresses sustainability as well as organic systems. The students have been asking for this repeatedly, and we've established that major. We've also established a major in renewable energy and we're combining a couple in plant sciences as well as forestry areas. So over the next 2 years, we'll be adding these new majors and also taking a look at how we teach. An important part of our teaching, we've learned, and all whenever we have interviews with the industry, with the people who hire our students, they talk about experiential learning and soft skills. So we're focusing a lot on making sure that every one of our students gets some kind of experience outside of the classroom that will help them be prepared for the real world when they get out there and improve their chances of getting jobs. Of course, I have to say, our college does extraordinarily well at placing students. As you can see in the next slide, 87% of our graduates are in jobs or continuing their education within 6 months of the time they graduate, with an average salary of around $35,000. And then 76% of those are in those jobs are related to their majors. If you looked around the university, you'd be hard-pressed to find a better place to get a degree, in my estimation anyway, a little bit prejudiced on that. But it's because the ag industry is so great and natural resources, and there is such a need for students. Also, we have our students are real leaders. On the next slide, you can see the last 5 of 6 Princess K's of the Milky Way came from CFANs, something we're proud of. Our livestock and dairy judging teams are amongst the best, and our dairy club is, if not the highest, amongst the highest number of students in a student organization across the entire university. We have a food product development team, the Ag Ed Professional Society, and FFA state officers. So our students are really leaders. You know, when I mentioned the 87% placement, I should have said, and you heard about it from the Melsey group, that the ag education students, 100% are placed. They do extremely well. There's a lot of pressure to get those students out there. I thought I'd mention the VetFast program, which is done in collaboration. It's really the Veterinary College, the College of Veterinary Medicine's program. But our animal science students and students also from Crookston and Fisheries and Wildlife can do their undergraduate in a rapid program where in 7 years they can get an undergraduate degree and also become a vet and get guaranteed entry into it. And that program is specifically for large animal vets because of the need in rural Minnesota for more and more in rural places all over the country. I listed here also the graduate education programs. Like our undergraduate programs, there's a wide diversity of our graduate education programs. Animal science, applied econ, the applied plant sciences, all of the areas you might think that our industry is so incredibly interested in. We get more and more students in those areas and more interest. Those are going to be the people, as I said, who will do the future teaching, the future research around the country in these cutting-edge areas that are extremely important to our industry. During the last 4 to 5 years, we had some major budget cuts. Thankfully, we had some reserves and were able to stay alive well, but we did not rehire positions. And currently, we're in the process of looking for a whole series of faculty positions in those areas that we've gotten pressing requests from the public, the industry, the students. So we're refilling a good number of those areas, and I have a list here. There's one mistake. There's two positions in horticultural sciences listed there that are the same. They're just in different words. But you can see we're doing everything from translational genomics in corn, molecular physiologists in animal science, to people, microbial ecologists in soil, water, and climate. Our Bell Museum has a need for a mycologist. So we have a whole series of hires that we're looking at now and making sure that they really fulfill the needs. And I can tell you that there isn't one industry group, either from the corporate sector or the commodity sector, that doesn't at some time visit me to talk about the fact that we need more people who are corn breeders or a variety of other things. So we're making sure that we do that. The next slide mentions MnDrive. This is an effort that President Kaler has put about. He's put forth the recommendation that to the state that they look at providing some funding for 4 areas that are of great economic interest to the state. And I mention them here because they also have to do with our college. 3 of them absolutely directly. One of them I'll show you a very indirect one. So securing the global food supply, safety, security, obviously a college like ours does that kind of work. The discoveries and treatments for brain conditions, well, I'll only say that where that comes into effect is your brain is what makes you choose the kind of food that you eat. So if we're going to deal with health problems and obesity, we may eventually have deep brain stimulation. Very peripheral, obviously. The robotics, the area of GPS and robotically designed machines, combines for farming is a very important part, and that's another area of interest. And advancing industry and conserving the environment in terms of water and other issues around that. So remediation and microbial remediation, some water issues. So MinDrive is very much part of what we're going to be involved in should that funding come through. In terms of assuring a safe food supply, we have a number of centers that have been focusing on that. We have the Food Industry Center, which has been doing a research-based analysis for Minnesota's $330 billion food industry. So they work very closely with the food industry. We also have an initiative that's across the university. It just happens to be administered in our college, Healthy Foods, Healthy Lives, trying to look at health and food. And, of course, obesity. There are actually more people now in the world obese than undernourished. There's a billion people that are obese or overnourished, overweight or obese. There's 300 million that are obese. So it's another area of interest, especially when the agricultural industry is constantly blamed by the medical sector for all those problems that are associated with obesity and diabetes. We have to be involved in that as well. On the next slide, I mentioned Marla Spivak's program. Marla Spivak, who also has is part of an extension specialist as well, she recently, in the last few years, got the MacArthur Genius Award. She has the only laboratory in the five-state area that studies bees. She's been studying bee colony collapse and many issues related to bees, including health-related things. Propolis is a compound that the bees make that line the hives that actually causes antimicrobial effects and may have some protection against disease and keeps that hive clean. So we've funded some research in that area as well. In terms of organic and sustainable agriculture, there is more and more pressure upon the industry to make sure it's environmentally friendly in everything we do, and sustainable is the word that's used. We have an initiative led by a number of our faculty in agronomy called Forever Green, and the notion there is to keep the land with plants throughout the year and have crops growing that we would traditionally refer to sometimes as cover crops that were really going to have economic value associated with it. Oils that might be used for fuel or oils that might be used for human consumption, for example. There have been efforts around cosmetics. Believe it or not, people come to us about that because there's natural products. Instead of using antimicrobials that are quote-unquote chemicals, there are natural product antimicrobials that people are interested in. We've established an organic dairy up in Morris, Minnesota, at our West Central Research and Outreach Center. And we also have had for a long time, many of you in here are familiar with the Minnesota Institute for Sustainable Agriculture. At this point, I thought I'd also mention on the next slide something about invasive species. Everyone in this room has probably heard about the Aquatic Invasive Species Center that is being funded through the state legislature with Peter Sorensen Center in our college. And that, of course, goes across the university. There are other invasive species. We've had a grant from the National Science Foundation evaluating these other invasive species that are not only aquatic, but wildlife and plant species as well. It's an area of great interest for many of us. The next slide starts talking about some of the discovery things, and I'll just go through these quickly, that we're involved in. Up in Morris, we've put together a plant that's a wind to ammonia. This is pretty incredible that we can make anhydrous ammonia from wind alone. What we're doing is we're using electrolysis, essentially, to get the hydrogen from water, nitrogen out of the air, using the Haber-Bosch reaction, which is an old, well-known chemical reaction from the early 1900s, to make anhydrous ammonia without using petroleum, with just using wind power. A very exciting project that we hope that we're going to be making the first anhydrous that will be available in co-ops this year. Also in discovery, you've heard the word omics. Omics just means a lot of data. So genomics, you get 17,000 results in terms of the gene pool and DNA analysis. Proteomics and metabolomics. We're involved in all of these areas. And on the next slide, I mentioned plant genetics. We have a team of scientists who just recently were funded by the National Science Foundation, several million dollars a year, to take a look at Metacago truncatula, which is a plant related to peas, soybean, and alfalfa and other legumes. The purpose of this, looking at the genome, this is important because we will understand better about nitrogen fixation and the use of nitrogen fertilizers. Also, if I want to go crazy on this and think 100 years out, maybe sooner, we can imagine genetically engineering plants that would have the ability to nitrogen fix that don't have that ability now. Also in the plant genetic area, another one that I'll mention is the barley cap initiative that we have going, mapping the entire genome of barley was recently mapped by this group. Again, this can help improve the resistance of this plant to disease. It can help in terms of any kind of nutrient we want in it, higher protein content, things of that sort, by doing breeding associated with markers for these genes. So in discovery, we're doing a great deal. Also in animal genetics, Scott Fehrenkrug at our college has been working on models for human disease with pigs. Pigs are closely related in terms of their GI system, monogastrics, and good models. And he has created a pig that has a high cholesterol level so that one could study even familial hypercholesteremia, for example, high cholesterol levels, how that could be used. So even though we don't think about agriculture directly related to the medical school, he's working closely with that. And finally, I'll just mention that we're involved in preparing the next generation, because what we need to do is realize that agriculture is not a dirty word. Agriculture is an area we want our students to go into. And rather than eliminating the word, generating excitement around it and making it a sexier pursuit for students. So we have the Bell Museum of Natural History as part of our college, where there are programs for K through 12. The Arboretum has programs K through 12 that's part of our college. And then in Lamberton, Paulie Nickel serves as the head of that research and outreach center, and has the University on the Prairie also educating folks. So the last slide I have here is just simply saying that we hope that we're helping the agricultural economy by educating the workforce, providing cutting-edge research-based information, and protecting our ag producers. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any questions?
Thank you very much, Dean, and thank you for your passion regarding agriculture, and a lot of exciting things going on at the University of Minnesota. Your placement rates are unbelievable, and obviously I'll be working closely with Chair Bonhoff on the MIN drive, because I think that's a pretty exciting proposal. Do members have any questions for Dean? Senator Herr?
Thank you, Mrs. Chair and Mr. Levine. I'm very proud that you brought some young student here to visit us, and I'm very proud that, you know, we are able to lay the brick for the future generation of agriculture. You know, I'm just a little curious on my side, because I'm representing a district that urban dweller, but they farm, and I'm just want to see, you know, see if you have any percentage of the student of their, you know, their children, whether any minority or, you know, people of color are interest in this area as well.
Mr. Chair, Senator, we have a very strong effort on trying to improve the diversity of our college. It has not been a very diverse pursuit in the agricultural sciences historically, as you're bringing up. We're doing more and more work around urban agriculture as well to get people involved, and that food systems approach, so that we get people of color really interested in this area and improve that diversity profile. We're also being very careful in terms of our hiring to take a look if we can bring people in that make build a welcoming environment.
Yeah, and
Senator,
if I want to add, I just don't want to put you on a scope, but I'm just at the same time want to empower the second generation of people to maybe still be intact with the area of agriculture. Thank you.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering that hog with the high cholesterol right now, I was wondering if the dean was going to promise us that you're developing a low cholesterol bacon for the future. Is that where we're going with this? Or?
Dean Levine, would you like to comment on that?
Well, Senator, Mr. Chair, Senator, no.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I can tell that you are very passionate. You have a wonderful college. And it's, again, I agree that it's nice you bring some of the students with. So we look forward to working with you this session, and thank you for your presentation.
Thanks for your interest.
Thank you. Next, we're going to hear from the University of Minnesota Extension Office. The dean is Ms. Durgan. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, and thank you again. My name is Bev Durgan. I'm Dean of University of Minnesota Extension, and it's a pleasure for me to be here today to talk to you a little bit about what's happening in Extension and where we're going for the future. I have three handouts for you. One is a copy of my PowerPoint presentation that I'll be going through. Another is the copy of our newest Source magazine that has many of the articles in it that I'll be talking a little bit about today. And then the third is just a four-pager that is a summary of Extension. It gives you a summary of our programs and also our budget that I'll talk a little bit about, because I know all of you are always interested in our budget. So I'll just go through the PowerPoint presentation. You have that in front of you, and just highlight some of the programs that we are doing in Extension. And I think all of you know that Extension is a part of the land grant system, and our mission is to bring the research from the University of Minnesota and other land grant universities to solve problems in Minnesota. So to bring solutions to things like responses to natural resources, farm profitability, Main Street businesses, family finances, farm finances, and safe water. So we take that, we take our mission very seriously, and we do that in a number of ways. So if you see the map there, we have county offices in all 87 counties. Those offices are funded by county government in a memorandum of agreement that we have with each county. Each county decides what level of funding that they want at the county, and then we provide that, and they are University of Minnesota employees. We have 15 regional offices throughout the state, and when possible, those regional offices are in collaboration with other University of Minnesota facilities. So we have regional offices in all of the colleges of food, agriculture, and natural resources sciences regional offices. So we collaborate that way. And we also have, as Dean Levine mentioned, we have faculty in our collegiate partners. So we have faculty in the College of Agriculture. We have faculty in the College of Veterinary Medicine, the College of Education, the College of Design, and the School of Humphrey, the Humphrey School of Policy. So we have our faculty embedded in those colleges to, again, to help with our research mission. Just like to talk a little bit about some of our impacts and outcomes with Extension through last year, what we reported on our federal report. Over 700,000 Minnesotans were contacted through Extension, either personal contacts, classes, or workshops. We're very proud of our youth programs. Many of you are familiar with our 4-H program. Our 4-H program is strong. It's increasing in Minnesota. We have 4-H in every county of the state. And if we look at our total youth program served by Extension, over 125,000 youth, we have one-on-one contact with them throughout the state. We also have over 900 Minnesota citizens on our advisory committees. Each county in Minnesota has an Extension advisory committee with anywhere from 10 to 12 members on that. That, so again, helps us to determine what the needs are in the state so that we can meet those needs. Also, we try to make sure that we are connecting with people, not just one-on-one, but with technology. And the University of Minnesota website, if you can believe Google, is the number two website in the country when people are Googling for information on an Extension website. Also, we provide information through the news media. Many of you have seen our news releases and our faculty in news media, educational information. And also, we are moving more and more of our programs onto the web because many people want that type of format. Our Parents Forever program is now web-based. Our food safety program is also in-person and web-based. So we're moving to try to contact more people through technology. On the next slide on page four, the last slide on page four, you will see our budget. And as you can see, that Extension is funded to a large extent by public dollars. 38% of our budget comes through the state of Minnesota through the University of Minnesota budget. Another 15% of our budget is through the federal sources, and 20% of our budget is through our county partners funding our local county offices. One thing that you can notice there is that 27% of our budget now comes from other sources. And as Dean Levine mentioned, through some of our budget reductions, we have put an effort in looking for other sources of funding. We have looked for fees and program fees, grants. We have increased our number of grants. So we've been able to keep our programs and increase our programs by looking for other sources of money to leverage with our state, county, and federal dollars. So the next slide, I'd just like to talk a little bit about Extension's model, and I think many of you are familiar with Extension. Again, what we do is we take the research from the University of Minnesota, and it is research-based education to solve problems, to help people solve problems, and to add value to Minnesota. So that is what our core mission is to make sure that we are helping the citizens of the state. And I have a slide there that just shows a program that I think is exactly when Extension is working what we do. That photo is a picture of Dave Ragsdale. He is a former faculty member with an Extension appointment, and it was around an issue of soybean aphid. I think some of you mentioned when soybean aphid hit this state. Soybean aphid was discovered in a farmer's field in southeastern Minnesota by one of our county Extension educators. That educator brought this insect to Dave Ragsdale, and that team of scientists went together to solve this problem in soybean aphid and have saved soybean growers in this state over $200 million in a decision aid to manage soybean aphid. So less yield loss and with less insecticide application. So again, we are in the fields, we are working with our educators and working with our researchers. One other thing that we've put an emphasis on is that we know that Extension, we cannot meet one-on-one with every farmer, but we do know that we want to try to get our information out to every farmer of this state. So we have made an effort to work with ag professionals throughout the state. All of you know that Minnesota, if you don't know, Minnesota has a very strong program of our crop consultants. It's one of the strongest crop consultants really in the North Central region, and we work directly with those crop consultants with a program that we call the Institute for Ag Professionals. So we have a number of programs for the crop consultants of this state. We just finished one of those programs, which is called our Ag Professional Update. And the number of ag professionals that go to that program each year, that one program, those ag professionals make recommendations on over 4 million acres in the state just from that one program. So it is a way for us to take the research and to multiply it through the ag professionals. There was some conversation earlier about farm financial management, and I just want to mention the work that is done by our Center for Farm Financial Management. Our Center for Farm Financial Management is a resource for farmers, lenders, and educators. They have developed a financial system called FinPAC that is used throughout the state by bankers, by MinSCU, and farm advisors to help with farm financial management. So it is a program that is used throughout the state and actually used throughout the nation. This Center for Farm Financial Management has also now developed a new program called Ag Plan. It is a web-based program for developing business models. So it is for farmers, for small farmers, for value-added farmers, and also for small rural businesses to develop a business plan, to have access to experts in the Center for Farm Financial Management on business plans, and get feedback on a business plan of whether it's doable or not, and to help with implementing that. And we know that many small businesses, that for them to see, they need to have a sound business plan and also to have a sound business plan to get loans. We also have a program on business retention and expansion. And our research has shown, and I think many of you know, that it's easier to keep a business in a small town than attract a business to a small town. So this program works with communities to retain the business that they have, to look at some of the reasons why a business may not expand or why it may be moving. So we've worked with over 60 communities so far in that area. Then I'll just talk briefly about one of the programs that we're very proud of, and that is our program on leadership. And that's one thing that we feel that Extension needs to do, is that we're building the capacity of the citizens in this state. And one of the programs we're very proud of is our 4-H program and our youth program. Many of you are familiar with 4-H. And as Dean Levine said, that the students in the College of Ag are leaders and are very engaged, I just want to mention that 100% of the officers directors of the Dairy Club were former 4-H'ers. So our 4-H'ers learn to be engaged as their 4-H'ers, and they continue to be engaged as they go off to college. And we're very proud of that. We have 4-H'ers as we look at our alumni in every college at the University of Minnesota. So we're very proud that we are helping them to become citizens and going to college. One other thing that we're doing in 4-H, as Dean Levine also mentioned, is that we are working to try to get youth involved in agriculture and in the sciences. And one of our programs that's very popular is our aquatics robotics program. And the teams of 4-H'ers build robots, aquatic robots, learn how to maneuver those. And we're very excited that we've partnered with the College of Science and Technology. We have a group of 5 graduate students that are working with our 4-H educators to redesign our aquatics robotic. And we will have a big rollout of that new robot this May. And we're hoping that this robot will enable 4-H'ers to use this robot in running water and other places, and to work with the Invasive Species Center on looking for invasive species and monitoring invasive species. So very exciting work of getting these 4-H'ers involved in science and keeping them in 4-H as they go off to college. We also have a number of leadership programs. We work with individual communities on their leadership programs. We also have leadership programs for emerging leaders, like our Red River Valley Emerging Leader Program that's in the northwest part of the state. It's in collaboration with the Northwest Foundation. And we also have a program I think many of you have heard about, is our Minnesota Agriculture and Rural Leader Program, MARO, which is in collaboration with the MNSQ system. This is a 2-year program, intensive program for leadership, but many of our graduates of our MARO program are leaders in the ag communities now. Many of them are executive directors of the ag commodity groups. We actually have a state representative who is a graduate of our MARO group. So they learn how to be leaders, better leaders, and stay engaged. And then finally, I just want to talk a little bit about healthy foods. As Dean Levine mentioned, that Extension is involved in the movement of healthy foods, local foods. We have conducted research at many of the sites throughout Minnesota on extending the growing season using high tunnels, and then also connecting those growers with people that will be using that produce. So our farm-to-table work, our farm-to-school program. Our farm-to-school program has many benefits. It helps the schools be able to give more healthy food to students, but also gives a market to those producers that are producing locally. And then finally, our food safety program, as I mentioned, and as Dean Lamide mentioned, food safety is a big issue throughout the U.S. and Minnesota. Our food safety program is certified by the state of Minnesota to train food handlers. The state of Minnesota, all food establishments have to have a certified food handler on site, and then we do that. We do that online. We have that program in English. We have it in Spanish. We're also teaching it in Hmong and Somali for many of our upcoming and new restaurants and food handling things that we're seeing throughout the state. So with that, I haven't covered everything in Extension. We have a broad range of programs. We have deep programs, but I just wanted to give you a flavor for some of the things that we're doing for agriculture and for rural communities in Minnesota. And with that, I'll stop.
Thank you, Dean Durgan. It was a very interesting presentation, and you're right, you are very diversified. Can I just ask you a quick question just for my clarification? On the Center for Farm Financial Management, is that a web-based program, did you say, or is that something that goes out to your regional offices?
Mr. Chair, the center is based in St. Paul, so we have faculty there, but the programs are throughout Minnesota.
Okay.
So, and some of the programs are online, FinPAC and other training. In fact, the Center for Farm Financial Management does a lot of training on how to use FinPAC. And then the Ag Plan, the program I talked about, that is a web-based program.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any other questions for the dean? If not, thank you very much
thank
for
you.
Your presentation. Next, we're going to hear from the Agriculture Utilization Research Institute, Senator Scogin. Welcome to the committee, and then I'll let you introduce your testifiers whenever you're ready to go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee, it's a pleasure to be here today. For the record, I'm Dan Scogan, Planning and Government Relations Director for AURI. Some of you call us ARI, and we are the Agriculture Utilization Research Institute. AURI has a 25-year history of adding value to agriculture through innovation, impacting statewide economic development. We take ideas from individuals, entrepreneurs, from small, medium, and large-sized businesses, and we help them become reality. Today, you'll be able to see that AURI has a statewide impact, creating jobs, creating products, and creating processes. I'm not here to tell the story today. I brought people with me that can tell the story better than I can. Today, you'll be hearing from Michael Sparby. He is our senior project strategist with AURI, but we want to begin our presentation today with AURI Chairman of the Board, Ron Obermueller.
Good afternoon, Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Ron Obermueller, Chair of the Minnesota Ag and Rural Development. Not quite sure where to start on this, but see where we're at on the slides. A great pleasure to be able to talk to you today. I think we have a good story to tell. I'll try to go through some of the structure of the organization a little bit so you have a clue what we are a little bit. But one of our taglines is ideas to reality. That's really what we are. We work with the second largest employer in Minnesota with ag. I mean, previous testimony kind of went through how important ag is to the state of Minnesota, so keep ahead of everything. We'll keep moving. Ag is ORI is actually led by ag people, so it's ag research kind of led by ag. The makeup of the board is representatives from the three major commodity groups. They're the chair of the House Ag Committee gets to decide one. The Senate Ag Committee gets the seat on there. The two major commodity general groups, Farm Bureau, Farmers Union, are on there. And we have two for ag business. So one's out of the banking business, and one is out of the animal nutrition business. So we like to think we're well-rounded. ORI was founded by, is basically born from the legislature as a state statute. We got 25 years in. We're partially funded by the state. A lot of is through collaboration. We work with individuals all the way to corporations, so it's a lot of the smaller people are the ones we work with. Probably the big word on this slide is the collaboration. We collaborate with a lot of people and get a lot accomplished. I believe this is a scatter map. I think we're missing the data from the first few years, but there's 1,400 clients represented on this map. I believe in your package you have a list of these clients. A lot of them are from the urban areas, a lot are from the rural areas. I mean, basically we're rural development, and it covers both sides of it. These are some of the logos of some of the companies that you might recognize from Minnesota. Central Valley, Chippewa Valley Ethanol, Corn Plus. A lot of success, a lot of different areas we get into. Some of the numbers, over the last 8 years, capital investments or plants have been about $414 million, 275 jobs. A lot of what we are trying to do is leverage our dollars, get the biggest bang we can for our buck. In the last 2 years, fiscal 11 and another slide, 12, we basically helped invest $5.6 million of non-state funding, basically by leveraging. A lot of these were to improve products. 90-some businesses helped over the last couple of years, so I think we have a very good story to tell. And you got to remember, on the national level, for every $1 invested in ag research, there's a $10 return in economic benefits. So it's a good program. It's well invested, and I'll hand it off to Michael.
Thank you, Ron. Mr. Chair, Michael Sparby with AURI, and I'm going to walk through the remainder of the presentation, essentially kind of showing how we accomplish what we do and how we go about it. Oh, I also want to mention that I am a 4-H'er. So. within AURI, we have core four focus areas, and those revolve around the area of food, renewable energy, bio-based products, and co-product utilization. And when you distill down all of the services that we provide, it essentially breaks down into three areas. One is the applied research and development area, and the focus of that is public domain initiatives, and I'll talk more about that later. The second area is hands-on scientific assistance, and that is handled directly with our scientists in our laboratories up in Crookston, Minnesota, at the University of Minnesota campus. We rent space there, and up there we have our food science laboratory as well as our microbiology laboratory. Down in Marshall, Minnesota, where we rent space from Southwest State, we have our full meats laboratory and sensory analysis, as well as our analytical chemistry. So if we want to do assessments on different types of products, we run it through our analytical chemistry. We do pilot processing in Marshall. And heading east over to Waseca is where we do our co-product utilization. And that's our dirty plant, because they deal with crop residues, a lot of dust, and a lot of sizing of egg fibers. So you usually want to visit the Crookston lab with the food lab and not necessarily the Waseca lab, because El will thrust something in front of you and say, hey, smell this. We go about our planning with a purpose, and you take a look at AURI's innovation strategy. It's fairly straightforward but very effective. It's generate the ideas, select the appropriate ones, and implement them to create value for the state of Minnesota. So the generation of ideas comes from the research that we do on the public domain level, the conversations, the brainstorming, networking, and as well as the stakeholder analysis and other tools I'll get to. We work across organizations to determine the highest impact research and move those forward. And then we bring everybody together in a process called the Rural Innovation Network, which I'll get into also. But essentially getting that information in the hands of industry to be able to implement that into the marketplace. So the plan, or once that research is done, that's for us is really just the beginning. The intent is to get that information into the hands of industry and to be able to get that implemented into the marketplace and creating value. Three systems that we use in our research-based methodology. The first one is annual stakeholder analysis that we do each year, where we scan 42 organizations annually, and those organizations are industry representation of our core four areas, so as well as commodity groups and other partners that we deal with. We also conduct needs assessments, which is the systematic process of determining and addressing needs and then gaps between what the current condition is and what the desired condition is, and figuring out where that gap is and how can we address that. And then once the research is done, and prior to plugging that into our Rural Innovation Network, We conduct a value chain analysis to ensure that our work is adding value where it's needed. We work closely with our partners, and with that, we assist our partners, the commodity group organizations, as well as the research institutions across the state. And the main emphasis of that is to make sure that we maximize our funding, their funding, priorities, and anticipated results. And a lot of times what one organization or commodity group is looking at funding, it aligns with another. And we try to collaborate those together and make the biggest impact. We're currently in the process of conducting a research capacity assessment in the state of Minnesota. And this is being conducted by Battelle Memorial Institute and is being funded in conjunction with the Minnesota Corn Growers and the Minnesota Soybean Growers. And the partners of this project are the commodity groups in the state, Minnesota Department of Agriculture, University of Minnesota, MinSCU, and others. And the goal is to develop a strategic roadmap to guide the future investment that research can be best linked for identifying market opportunities, international research trends, and regionally based industry specializations. Now we're done with that, and this is the fun part. This is the stuff I like. Talking about clients and working individually with clients and creating value for the state. So I'm going to run through a number of client examples and end up finishing up on some public domain research initiatives that we're doing. So the first one is Compostomat. This is a product that is made from corn stalks, and essentially within farrowing in nursery barns, the old method, or some of the method that's still going on, is once the pigs are removed, you'd have rubber mats, and you'd take those rubber mats out, and you would pressure wash them and then put them back in. But a lot of times you would not get all of the disease off of the mats, and you would end up contaminating a new batch coming in. With the Compostomat, you're able to pull that mat out completely, put it in the compost pile, and you're done with it. They've sold over 1 million mats so far, and it is being processed in northern Minnesota, actually a little town called Floodwood, straight west of Duluth, if you're familiar with Floodwood. I don't think there's a stop sign in Floodwood. But Bioplastic Solutions is an eco-friendly building material utilizing egg fiber. He did a lot of work with our laboratory in Waseca to develop the product. Currently making door parts for doors and windows, wall trim, office furniture, and medical devices with 80% bio-based carbon. And Sweet Scoop. This is a manufacturing facility located in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota. And it is a flushable cat litter. I personally use this, or my family cat does. And ever since its inception 17 years ago, it was actually my first project when I started 17 years ago. But we assisted them in the beginning with the original product development, and over the years they've come out with the new and improved versions, and all of that work has happened in our Waseca laboratory. Riverview Dairy is located in west central Minnesota, out by Morris, and they operate, or they milk, about 30,000 head. And with that, they have two methane digesters. And one of the co-products coming out of a methane digester is the biosolids. And they produce a lot of biosolids. And currently, when it comes out of the cold press machine, it's at about 68 to 70% moisture. And didn't really know where to go with it. They were selling it for bedding at a very low cost. So we assisted them in characterizing the physical and the chemical attributes of this. And once it was dried down and partially composted, it had the same attributes as like peat moss. So we connected up with the Horticultural Research Center, Steve Poppy, at the Rock in Morris, and were able to put forward research study over the past 2 years to utilize this material in horticultural environments. And we're getting the final reports done, hopefully within the next couple of months, but very positive indications so far. Earth Clean Corporation is out of St. Paul. This is a fire retardant that's made from cornstarch, a mixture of cornstarch and soybean oil. And essentially, this 10 gallons of this product would displace 100 gallons of water. We assisted in product development and testing, and hopefully this firefighting season will be able to have product in use. Vector Windows is a vinyl window manufacturer out of Fergus Falls, Minnesota. They originally came to us looking to replace a piece of metal that provide a stiffening effect within their vinyl window. And we worked with Winona University, our state university, to identify is there a bio-based product out there that we could use to displace this metal piece. And we focused in on PLA or polylactic acid with stiffeners, with egg fibers, and couldn't get it through testing. What happened is through that process, though, we were able to connect them with a company that provided soy-based foams, and to be able to inject the soy-based foams into the cavity of the vinyl window. We tested it out perfect. They currently have that in their production line. In their triple pane windows, they're able to achieve an R5 factor. So on their higher grade windows, they have soy-based foam in them, and they're currently looking at adding that to their whole window line. Omega Maiden, producer was interested in taking a look at camelina, which is an oil seed, and we assisted with the nutritional analysis as well as the product development and cold press product that is now on the shelves. We take a look at our public domain research initiatives. The objectives of these are to develop new products and processes that create new uses for ag commodities, applied research and technology transfer, as well as identifying emerging trends and opportunities. We take a look at the ones that we've identified for this year. First one is a bio-based needs assessment. And that one is essentially, again, trying to identify where the current state is, where the desired state is, and what needs are in between there, and start to address some of those needs for the bio-based industry. Identification of opportunities in the bio-based coating industry. Higher value uses for egg fibers. Example of that would be the injecting egg fibers in PLA as a stiffening agent. Soy-based polyol research is targeted towards the biodiesel industry, being able to identify alternative products that they could produce within these plants if the economics of biodiesel are not sufficient for them. Clean label alternatives is to essentially identify natural ingredients to replace some of the chemical ingredients in food manufacturing. And food safety interventions is to assist food manufacturers in identifying interventions that they can do in advance for geared towards food safety. I could get it way more in-depth than these, but I'm trying to go over the surface. The Food Co-op Peer-to-Peer Forums is comes out of a grant that we received from the USDA Rural Development Cooperative Development Grant. And we had one last year. We worked with a lot of food co-ops in the state and identified a need that a lot of the co-ops were dealing with the same issues. And this initiative is to actually pull them together and start a cross-fertilization of addressing some of those issues individually. The Food Hub Resource Assessment is an effort to take a look at locally grown foods. And what we've done in the past is we created a renewable energy self-assessment for counties or regions. We'll be able to go in and utilize this tool that identifies what your potential resources are within your county and match it up with your demand and try to identify synergies there. What we're looking at doing with this one would be very similar, being able to see what are your production capabilities within your region or within your county, and what is your potential demand for the use of those of that production, and being able to start matching those up. Identifying low-cost grain processing co-products for a swine diet. That one is targeted directly with utilizing solubles, which is the liquid co-product coming off of the ethanol production, and that work is being done with Sam Badu in Waseca. A co-product assessment, essentially to take a look at the egg processing industries in Minnesota and what co-products are undervalued and how can we increase the value of those co-products. Biomethane from producer gas assessment. This one is taking a look at digester gas. When you produce methane from a digester, it's not clean. And what technologies are out there that we can take a look at cleaning that gas up to be able to better utilize it. We're currently in the process of collaborating with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture as well as MPCA on that one. Ethanol plant, zero liquid discharge, again, fairly straightforward, taking a look at and assisting plants achieving a zero liquid discharge. And biodiesel troubleshooting is kind of an ongoing one with our facility in Marshall has been assisting the biodiesel industry in addressing cold flow issues. I'm going to give you a couple of examples from initiatives or research projects that have happened in the past or currently ongoing. And one is looking at bioreactors or biofilters to help reduce fertilizer runoff and soil erosion. And this work is being conducted with the USDA ARS lab in St. Paul. Utilizing crop residues as the bioreactor. And we're actually getting some fairly favorable results, and this project is still in process. We do a considerable amount of collaboration and work with the university dealing with feed trials and also in conjunction with commodity groups and identifying and carrying out those feed trials to take a look at increasing the utilization of co-products. Examples of a co-product would be distillers' grains or the solubles or glycerin, which would be out of the biodiesel process. And this is an example of kind of going back to the generate, select, and implement of how that works. We worked with the Minnesota Soybean Growers and the University of Minnesota to conduct three initiatives in the past of how could we utilize low oleosaccharide soybean meal. So essentially taking out the gas-causing sugars in the soybean meal. And we found favorable favorable responses in the areas of turkey and swine. We presented that to mule producers in the state, and Midwest Ag grabbed on to that concept and that opportunity, and right now they are building new processing plants, and jobs and value are being created. So when a client comes to us, this is what we deliver. Seamless services from idea to implementation, unbiased information grounded in science, access to leading research in value-added agriculture, dedicated project staff, and connections to various resources that help value-added agricultural businesses achieve their goals. And with that, I'll stand for questions.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Are there any questions from the members regarding the AURI and their programs?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dames.
And Mike, would you, Michael, would you expound a little bit? You've talked about how you've helped businesses and how we've gotten new products in the market and stuff, but could you talk a little bit about the research that's done that products do not appear to be a product that you can introduce into the market? And that's another way of saving capital, is not having people spend their money. So could you expound a little on that?
Mr. Sparby.
Senator Dames, Mr. Chair. Absolutely. One of the roles that we do is that due diligence. And there have been numerous occasions where we've assessed projects for producers and entrepreneurs, and it just did not make scientific sense, or there was no market for it. And sometimes saying no is not the the funnest message to deliver, but it saves money and time and effort for those entities and those businesses.
Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Sparby, too, and I'll just tell you that I did tour the Waseca plant, and it is pretty amazing. I think that, you know, the research that they do there and the value-added stuff is a very important part. It really opened my eyes just to be able to spend some time there. And, in fact, I know that you talked in one of your client stories about the bioplastic solutions, and he said by no uncertain terms he would not have been able to continue to grow his business or even be in business if it wasn't for the help of AURI. So those are some real success stories. We found out an important thing, that you were a 4-H member. So now I just want to ask you, too, is are you related to Wally by any chance?
Oh, boy. Yeah. I am the youngest son, and I will let you know that I think he is out on a boat off the coast of San Diego right now. So.
Nice. Well, good. Anyway, thank you all very much for your presentation. Are there any other questions for members? Otherwise, thank you very much, members, for your attention, and thank you for your presentation. And with that, the meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.